Welcome to the Renovating Australia podcast, where we'll take you on site with industry leaders, experts, and everyday people who've mastered DIY or are just giving it a go.
If you're starting a renovation, building a new house, or just looking for some inspo, we've got you covered.
Before we get started, everything we talk about on this podcast is general in nature and does not take into account your own personal situation. If you're looking to get advice, please seek the help of a licensed financial advisor or professional consultant.
So let's renovate Australia. Hey guys, and welcome back to the Renovating Australia podcast. I am your host, Katie Cordery, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Alicia Chapman.
Hello guys, welcome back.
So today I'm still trying to come to terms with or even come up with the words to describe where we are because it's pretty bloody impressive. We're actually joined today by Harley Weston, who is the Managing Director of Solaire Properties. And we are currently sitting in the, I guess this is the living dining space of your latest project, Vanquish. Welcome, Harley.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on. I much appreciate it. Yes, this is definitely the downstairs dining slash living slash, I guess, whatever you want, entertainment slash almost courtyard when you open the doors up.
It's just everything. It is. Gosh, as Katie said, I can't find the words, and we have to put so many photos of this on the gram because I kind of had seen this before in a couple of campaigns and I thought, wow, that's an incredible property. And then I walked through the door here. And we'll go into it in a moment, but like closing that door, it's like a vacuum and it's so quiet and peaceful and the perfect temperature. And it's just beautiful.
I know. I mean, it's just so quiet in here. Maybe we'll record all our podcast episodes in here. Yeah. When it sells, we'll talk to the buyer and just make sure that they're okay with us to come back.
It's actually the perfect place, almost like a designated sound booth.
It is. But I mean, talk to us about Solaire. Where did it all start? What's your role and who's behind Solaire?
Sure. I guess normally I'd first start with something like this by saying, just to acknowledge the elephant in the room, I'm a walking hypocrite in some ways because my background is actually mineral exploration, spending nearly 15 years exploring BHP's coal resources, both thermal and metallurgical in the Bowen Basin. And then, I guess in 2015, thereabouts, I just saw so much waste happen on a grand scale, but, particularly dealing with those larger companies. The older days of big wheels turn slowly, and I just didn't see any agility in the way that waste was managed and also just a significant waste of resources. So I wanted to build the world's first carbon positive home, but you can never get your ambitions and your capabilities mixed up, and in that case I didn't, that was impossible. I can't build a kid's cubby house out of cardboard boxes personally. It's not my skill set. However, one of my good friends, Paul McElhenney, we're all from Yeppoon up in central Queensland.
Nice, yep.
He's a fourth generation builder and very exceptional and well experienced at building executive homes and high quality homes. And his younger brother, James McElhenney, who's the third director of the company, we're all directors. And he had a lot of experience in civil construction, working for Hutchinson's. He did some big projects, quite a young man, doing the Central Queensland University upgrade, Gladstone Airport upgrade, quite big projects. And I hadn't even met James at the time, met the rest of his brothers, but they're all fourth generation builders. They'd moved down to Brisbane and I decided to move down here in 2017 and they'd just bought that house just over to the north of us here. I personally could not believe the price of an old Queenslander in Auchenflower, and I just absolutely refused to pay $1 million for a broken down Queenslander. However, they were more educated on that topic than I was and they were like, nah, this is what it looks like. And I was like, yeah, really? Okay.
So I said, Brisbane.
So I said, have a go. And then those two did their original project across the road and did a great job of that. Together with their skill sets, we looked at what Solaire would be. And we came up with, we know that luxury will sell and these guys are exceptional at building luxury homes. Sustainability was something that I was definitely extremely focused on. And then when it comes to innovation and obviously future-proofing a home and being ahead of the market, that's when smart homes came in. So our original three catchphrases were luxury, sustainable, smart. And then the thought process behind that was there was three pillars then that you could leverage off. And there's a number of other philosophies that we sort of lived on, which was mainly around how do we build these sustainable homes without breaking the bank, without overcapitalizing, because that's obviously, you're innovating, you're coming up with new materials, you're taking risks, and this house is the absolute pinnacle of that. But yeah, we've done this from the outset. So our very first home in Paddington over in Ross Street, that was sort of where it all began, and we took it to the next level pretty well off the bat. So we just, you know, you almost started by just Googling sustainable this, you know, sustainable this, sustainable that, because it wasn't a lot around. And then that led us to some of the manufacturers and where they were, and then to where we are in this, you know, in this amazing home right now. So that was probably the initial growth. So this would be our fifth home, and each time we've stepped it up and up.
I love that. But I think touching on those three pillars, like, you can see it encapsulated everywhere you look in here. Like, technology, just that one tiny facet. We, believe it or not, Katie and I were early today. This is the first time thing. It probably will never be repeated. We drove up and we're like, hey, Holly, we're here. And he's like, oh, just wait a sec, I'll open the garage door for you. He was
Stafford.
Away. Yeah. Like, oh, we're talking, you know, 15, 20 minutes away. Pushes a button and the garage door opens.
Like, yeah, oh, that was pretty mind blowing.
I know. Yeah, right. And we came to this amazing house.
Yeah.
I might be a little bit numb to that by now then.
I know. You're probably just like, oh, really? You're getting excited by that? But we were really excited by that.
So cool. And as I said, that's just like the tip of the iceberg. Well, let's step back. So, five projects. Talk us through the first one. So this is obviously the pinnacle of sustainability and setting trends, breaking records, being such a forward thinker in the space with this particular house. Was the first one the same, or how did that start?
The first one was based off that agreement that James Paul and myself had. We all came to the agreement that it was a good move to have a point of difference. Mm-hmm. They were already just adamant about quality and obviously professionalism. And for me, that was a very easy tie-in because we were all on the same page. Yeah. And so the first one, we just literally started by recycling the house. So when we did a demo, we had sort of separate skips, and there was definitely some naivety there on my behalf, where I was like, went and bought all these different skips to put out the front to separate everything. And there was a little bit of a tussle back and forth between myself and the guys around how we were doing that. And it was largely just to pour space, but that was just something that I didn't come from building sites where there is no room. You've got a one-way street and you've got truck deliveries. Yeah. And that's probably where most of it was formed, to be honest. And it started with a demolition where we would pull everything out of the house that was reusable by hand, and then we'd sell it online through Gumtree. And then when we started building from the ground up, we were of the same opinion that we shouldn't be using Merbau particularly, which is a timber that gets used quite heavily, but deforestation is an issue. So we decided that everything that we were going to use, we wanted to make sure that it was legit. And the best way to make sure it's legit is to either use like the FSC, PEFC type certifications, but then you can also take that another level and go to chain of custody. It's got to have a certificate. And even to the point where I traveled down to Mount Gambier to go to some of the logging places to see it and, you know, make sure this is for real. So we really were serious about it, and we made sure that every material that we could source had some sort of sustainable measure in place. And I think we did a fairly exceptional job of that. And the goal in those houses was to build a luxury home with good city views. We wanted to make it look and feel and smell like a mansion, but be sustainable so that we didn't differentiate between any of the buyers. Mm-hmm. So if you walked into it, you wouldn't know that it was a sustainable home.
Yep.
You know, longer term goals have always been quite innovative. The three of us are quite innovative thinkers, particularly around energy. So we wanted to design new battery systems and ways to power a home, and then tie it in with automation. So on that first one, we actually wrote the coding and we actually built the automation system by tacking a few other bits and pieces together, which we wouldn't do again.
Yeah.
FYI.
Yes.
So it's
first
and last.
You had to use three apps or four apps to do bits and pieces. So that was one of the learnings from the first one. But the idea around that was to be sustainable, manage our construction waste, and make it very energy efficient. Mm-hmm. That were the goals. And then what ended up happening was we started looking at pools, because we were just looking at everything that we, like, every time you started something new, like, how do we improve it? This building, this industry needs to get along, you know? So we started looking at the pool and like, well, how do we get chlorine out of the pool? How do we reduce the chemicals? So we ended up going with the same technology from the Commonwealth Games, where it used dissolved solids out of the atmosphere, like soot and carbon and those sorts of things, and then turned it into chlorine. So we managed to reduce the chemicals in the pool by about 75%.
Wow.
So it was like a lot more fresh. And then And then while we're on the subject, we were like, oh, well, let's get the toxins out of our paints. So again, we just kept researching.
Yep.
And we ended up going with the Resin products out of New Zealand. So so we managed to get VOCs out of the house. And to be fair, our last two sales have actually been more largely geared towards the real ticker for the purchaser was around chemicals.
Yeah,
not
right.
Not so much the energy, because to be fair as well, when you're selling houses and that, you know, $3 to $7 million, sometimes people don't really know who paid their payable anyway. So what it came down to was the importance, and that was a surprise for us. We always reflect on the fact that we didn't really go after the chemicals so much as the waste and the energy. In that house, we had like carpets that were made out of like 70% corn sugar and these types of things, like waste products. Yeah, so we were finding that some of these products were actually available through commercial retailers, but they just weren't the products that they were pushing. They weren't like your mid-tier, they weren't their high tier, but they were there, but they just were in their infancies. And our goal, I guess, overall is to reduce the cost of being sustainable and make it more comfortable but look the same. So basically you don't have to sacrifice anything. And then if it's going to cost more, how do we get that down so that you can go that extra 5 or 10%, not 20? And we've been doing a pretty good job of that. So
That's crazy. Like, I think just to even awareness.
Yeah.
As you're talking, I'm thinking about all the stuff we're building with. I'm like, oh my God, how many chemicals are in my house? Like, you just don't consider that stuff unless someone opens your eyes to them. And that's, I guess, you know, as you said, in being in the forefront, you have to literally build the apps to make it work because no one's done it before. But this sounds, it feels, you know, this is going to be the future. Like, definitely. This is where you're going
to, and it has to be, like, and just to touch on chemicals again, like, it's, you know, the new car smell. It's like one of the worst. It's just literally like VOCs are volatile organic compounds, and they basically boil at room temperature, and they're just nasty.
Because I love that smell, and I would boil it up and spray it all over me. Like,
give me some of that new car smell.
Not anymore.
It's actually not very good for you. No. And probably for adults, like, it's not going to kill us, so to speak. But you know, for those with hypersensitivities, and that's obviously increasing in our children and now, and in some of our families, and obviously for young babies, it's probably just best that we don't. You know, if we don't have to, why would we? Type thing. You wouldn't cover yourself in bleach if you didn't have to. So, so we were just looking to bring those products to the light, and then obviously, we probably stood out because, unlike most developers, we were prepared to put our hand in our pocket and pay for it, knowing that if we do it right, it was high quality projects, and like the building quality represents savings in power, but also value of life and quality of life. Then in the longer run, then we'd get our return on investment on a 5-year horizon. And we're in the third year now, and here we are at Vanquish. And now there's a global pandemic, but whatever.
Oh gosh.
The job goes on.
Yeah.
100%. So Vanquish, let's touch on this house. It's remarkable. It really is.
And even before, I know we were laughing, but this would have to be like one of the most allergy-friendly houses in the entire world, I'd have to say. When you pulled the vent out before to see what was in there, and what, it's only been sort of running for a couple of months?
Not even that. That's probably 3.5 months.
I'm actually like terrified to know what's in my house now. Like,
what's in your lungs.
In the air quality.
It is crazy. So for context, there's this filtration system in the house, and it actually, Harley, let's let you explain exactly what it does. But we saw the inner workings of this.
So we'll start with the passive house itself is actually a building model, and it's originally developed in Germany and Austria, and it's designed for super cold climates to keep the heat inside a home to make them extremely energy efficient. And then along with that comes air tightness, because your heating will leak out through the top of your windows, and then cool will just seep in underneath your doors like a very small hole will let a lot of energy go. So when you make a house airtight, you also have to make it ventilated. Otherwise, your CO2 just from your breath will, kill you. So in due course. So to maintain the ventilation, a passive house comes fitted with what they call a HRV or an ERV. So a heat recovery ventilation system or an energy recovery ventilation system. And the best way to explain it is, like, you put a hand on someone's arm, you can instantly feel that heat. That's conductive energy transfer. So what happens is the ventilation system will remove dirty air from inside the home, out of your kitchens, laundries, and bathrooms, and stale air, and it'll pump it out of the house, and it'll suck in new air from the outside. So normally, because you've got a fireplace inside in Europe, and it's, say, nice 25, 30 degrees toasty inside, and outside's, you know, 5 or minus 5, you don't want to just keep on having to bring in this cold air and heat it. So as you pump out the 30 degree air and the, let's say, 10 degrees for round numbers, as they come in, they go through this ventilation system, like it's like a big box that you saw in the laundry. For the listeners, it's about the size of a dryer. As it goes through there, it goes through a series of fine straws that are basically made out of rice paper. So the air doesn't actually mix, but the hot and cold air touch each other through a small film, and in physics, everything wants to equalize, so they both get to 20 degrees. So I just stole 10 degrees of the temperature out of the air that was leaving and just added it to the air that was coming in. So I've just so straight away I've got my air temperature back up to 20. So now I've only got to take it the extra 10. You know what I mean? So that's where it comes down to the efficiency. However, to jump back to your comments, in the process, we actually filter the air in this house down to 4 microns. So we will filter out dust, soot, highway rubber, carbon, ash, and even down to pollen. So it's basically, short of going to a HEPA or a HEPA filter, it's about as well filtered as the air can get. And I just looked at that filter the same time as you did just before. So I was just as surprised how dirty that, how much it's actually pulling out of the air.
Yeah. Especially for Brisbane. Like we think that this is like quite a, you know, clean sort of state, you know, Queensland. But really, after seeing that, I'm really sort of impressed and nervous as well to see what's kind of...
It is a good... We are in a very clean city. However, in southeast Queensland, it's a predominant southeasterly wind. And we've also got the M1. And obviously, I do some flying sometimes in the morning from Redcliffe, and you'll fly. You'll get up just after daylight and look back at the city, and you can see a yellowy-orange dome, and you can actually tell which way the wind's going, because the top of the dome will be going out over the ocean, or it'll be going over the land.
That's scary. I remember being in LA and just thinking, what is this? Like, is it raining today? Like, what's happening?
Can you imagine if you built a house like this over there? Oh, the filters that you would see.
Yeah, well, that's why they are quite popular. Like New York, I think in new buildings now, it's actually code. So you have to build them to a passive air standard, yeah.
Yeah, wow. Well,
yeah, don't quote me on every type of building, but I think at least for some of the commercial stuff.
Yeah, nice. Oh, wow. But it is kind of becoming, as we said before, the way of the future. Like, it's becoming more accessible, people becoming more informed about it.
Yeah. So probably the three components of passive house are being airtight, the ventilation system, and obviously high-performance insulation, which is both in the glazing and into the wall frames. So that's what we've pretty well done here. However, you know, reversing the model of trying to keep the heat in, we're trying to keep the heat out. And that's why it also makes it such a unique project, because it's not something that's been done in the subtropical environment, but from an engineering / technical perspective, it should work. So we thought, okay, well, why don't we give it a go? And credit goes to Mr. John Monahan from Ecolateral, who has been our passive house consultant, and he's also been just our environmental consultant since we started. They really dug in, and then obviously Paul had to pull that together and work out how to actually make this work. So one of the other key things is it's not just the windows and doors that are airtight, it's the whole house has to be built and wrapped like a Christmas present in an airtight membrane. Yeah. And the airtight membrane, to give you an idea, is like 1.2 meters high and a 50 meter roll. So you've actually got to lay it on and then tape it together. And you know, imagine trying to wrap a Christmas present this big and you can't get tears in it.
Oh,
and it's got to be sealed to the floor, and it's got to be sealed to the windows, and it's got to be sealed to the roof. It's got to be completely sealed all the way around. And bear in mind, even a rock block wall is not airtight. Even a rock block core filled wall is not airtight. Because air, believe it or not, can actually pass through the porosity of the H pattern in the brick. So don't get me wrong, that's just to meet the passive house standard. It's probably like a 90% airtight, but not to meet this. The actual passive house certification process is one of the most rigid in the world. It's completely independently certified, and it's built into one of the most profound spreadsheets that I've ever seen in my life. There's so many values and inputs to get it right.
And I think like it is a passive house, and that is just so incredible. But there's so much more to this house as well. Like we were touching on before we started recording, the tiles and every material that you've selected for this house has a reason and a purpose behind it. So talk us through some of that. Where did the tiles come from? What's their story? The taps, like everything that you've chosen. What are those little things that you've looked out for along the way?
Sure. That's probably been with us now since the start. For us, it doesn't even really cross our mind anymore, because that's just like a standard. Like a Solaire property comes with that as a standard. The passive house is probably the addition here. But as I mentioned earlier, the house next door to us, we built also. But the tiles are a 40% recycled material, and they use 60% less water in the manufacturing process. And we just source them through Australian suppliers. They're actually an Italian tile, so I'll put my hand up and say that they do have carbon miles associated with them, but they're the most sustainable tiles that we can come across. Mm-hmm. And again, the same thing with the poor awesome bench tops. They're both companies, even though they're different, have the same recovery rate on their waste manufacturing and the same water recovery. In regards to the taps, when we personally, all three of us, toured the Sussex factory in Melbourne, just to, again, go and check it out, not to mention the fact that Sussex, the family and the story behind that business is second to none. It's multi-generational. Mm-hmm. Started making sleeper earrings and now they make some of the best taps in the world.
Yeah.
And they've actually got a process whereby, like, to make a small little knob that goes on your bathroom tap, you might use 2 kilos of brass. Because a lathe will just go in and shave the inside out and you're left with all this waste. So they've actually got their own foundry on site and where they grab it all and all the different types and then they'll melt that back down on site back into new rods and then back in.
Do it again. Wow.
And just the story of the staff that they've got there, the people that have been working for them for their whole lives, you know, like craftsmen, people that actually making things by hand. It's not just a manufacturing line. So for us, it was also the story. So that's why we partnered with them. And now everything we do is with Sussex. They're great to deal with. And obviously it's legit zero waste. And then again, even on this project just next door here, like things that people don't fully understand. And whether it's because of my resource background, but like the insulation that goes into your roof is just smashed up industrial glass. So if you do a demo, you can grab that glass, take it somewhere else, and they'll turn it back into insulation. People just don't understand that sometimes the materials that you put in somewhere is actually just a waste product from somewhere else.
Yeah, right.
That's why they call it glass wool, because it's just basically slivers of fine.
So itchy.
Yeah.
The itchiest. Oh my God, I think I had about 6 showers and it still never came off.
And the other thing we did, which we started then at Ross Street as well, people might not know and comes from my plant background, is that gyprock is actually gypsum crystal that's just pressed between two sheets of paper. So the two materials are paper and gypsum crystal. So gypsum crystal is actually an industrial soil conditioner that we use in commercial agriculture. So it actually helps organic compounds bind to clay, improves soil structure and reduces the requirement for fertilizer. So literally, in the last 6 months, someone in Brisbane, and probably even myself, has been eating food that has been conditioned or fertilized by the waste that came off this building.
Wow.
And bear in mind that from an industrial perspective, that happens on the big commercial scale.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's just so much waste, and obviously with waste levies. But we just really wanted to drive some change around. How do you get people to stop looking at the bottom line and start looking at the triple bottom line? And you can't expect everyone to, you know, be able to fork up the time and the labor, but being able to make those solutions more available and more cost effective, then we can have triple bottom line operations.
Yeah. I was going to say that's a great segue into how the hell am I going to make my house sustainable, or how could the average Joe like me make our houses sustainable?
Very good question.
Average Joe now?
Yeah, I'm that basic bitch average Joe. I'm okay to say that. But honestly, like, how would someone be able to do this, even just the little steps to take? I mean,
heaps of things you can do.
Like, we've definitely started recycling a lot more. My mum is probably someone that has been doing this for years. Like, we had a full composting bin, all of that sort of stuff. But how could someone like me start in this space?
First things first, I suppose, is starting your personal life before you even get to the house. But because we're on a renovating show, definitely just start with the easy stuff. The government basically pays you to put solar panels on your roof. Believe it or not, we've only got 34% of Australians have got solar on their roofs, even though it's pretty well free because the government pretty well pays for it. Yeah. So do that, because that's, you know, just makes a lot of sense. I still hear this a lot. Oh, you know, there's no point in doing it now. Technology goes so fast that they'll be outdated. I'm like, well, what are you going to do? You're going to hold on to your iPhone 1 because the iPhone 12 hasn't come out yet? Like, what?
Exactly.
It's as good as we have right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So we have to just go with it. And solar panels, they're probably the easiest, cheapest, quickest way to go. If you're doing a renovation, this is when then you can have a little bit more impact. If you're doing a renovation, there's a number of different avenues that you can get rid of your waste through. It's either sell it on Gumtree and just make some pocket money, put it on Gumtree to give away, tag it to companies like Reverse Garbage or the world's biggest garage sale, which is another side shoot of my businesses. And you've also got the Renovator's Barn and the Big Red Shed for those that are in the Brisbane region. So if you don't want it and you don't want to waste it, just go and give it away. It's better than just throwing it in the tip. It's going to cost you the tip anyway.
The stuff that people want as well, like rocks out of my backyard. I have, believe it or not, I have sold rocks.
Do you know how much they're worth?
My backyard. Yeah. People pay so much money for rocks. And just the craziest things, like we have had the same thing. I don't want to throw this stuff away because at some point I am looking for things like this.
Exactly.
So I was like, surely someone else will want this. Just put it up. Like I have got rid of light fittings. I've got rid of old curtains, like anything you could think of. We got rid of like broken Besser blocks. I have no idea what they were doing with
it. You can crush them up and put them on retaining walls. You can just use them. Fill.
Someone was so excited I had them. I'm like, here you go. Sure. Come and pick them up. You're like, I don't have to pay for a skip. Like, there's so much that people are interested in.
That's that circular economy that we really need to really. That was for me one of the still in my heart for Soled. That's one of the biggest things for me is how do we just one minimize waste on the way in, and then how do we recover it on the way out and either give it to, you know, DIY projects or find some sort of commerce platform where we can get rid of it. So back to if you are doing a renovation, so don't waste it. See where you can repurpose it. There's plenty of avenues and they're going to be increasing particularly over the next 2 years. And then after that, I would insulation. Get it in there. It'll pay dividends. And then obviously when it comes to doors and windows, you wouldn't believe how much air can fit through a small hole very quickly. The reason that planes fly is because air can get compressed very easily.
Yep.
So large volumes of heating and cooling can seep out underneath your doors and over the top of your doors and windows. So cold air sinks, hot air rises. So cold air, all it wants to do is get out. So it'll just flow under a door. And if you want to test that, what you can do is turn your air conditioner on during the day and then just go outside and just go around and just move the back of your hand along and just see if you can feel cool on the hairs on the back of your finger. You'll start to see, particularly if you're living in the old Queensland and you get those air gaps where you can see the light through it.
Yep.
That's a problem. So what you can do there is go to one of your local hardware stores and you can just very simply buy stick-on rubber strips or a little, you know, just or if you want to do a proper job and you're renovating, then just make sure your window frames are tight.
Mm-hmm.
Put some seals on them. You'll be surprised how much energy you'll save just by doing that.
Yep, our house is like Swiss cheese. Literally, everywhere has holes.
Most old Queenslanders are like that. They're terrible.
That's all right. We can fix it. Repainting. Yeah. This is what we're
it's
here
pretty
for.
Simple.
So.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah,
no. So that's they're the best ones. And if you are repainting, then you can just go chemical free when you do it. The key is just to do your research before you start and then just have a go at it. But anything that you can do, I'm not one of those like evangelist type people that's like, you have to go passive house. And to be fair to anyone who's in the passive house space, some people are just like, you just can't. It has to be 100% or don't worry.
Nothing.
But for me, I'm like, well, this just doesn't make sense. Like not everyone has the capacity or the resources to just go and build something like this. This is very much a flag on the moon type project. But if you can get your house more airtight but still maintain ventilation, if you can increase your insulation, put some solar panels on the roof, and that's what, and you've got, if like, you've got a $10,000 budget, so that's what I'd do.
Yeah.
And what about, there's lots of plants around us at the moment and they look beautiful and they're so aesthetic and I just love plants anyway. Is there any benefit to any of the ones that are here or is there anything that helps with?
Mainly mental health because plants are really good for the subconscious.
That's a great point.
Yeah. Obviously living in green spaces and the placebo effect, believe it or not, and that's scientifically proven. And the other thing is about plants is beyond that, they actually, because they're a non-reflective surface and they're actually organic, they will take the heat in. That's why rainforests are such good sinks.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll take that heat in and they won't just build up the heat on it. And then obviously underneath there where it's all shady, that's anywhere that's, because like I said before, everything wants to go to the same pressure. Everything wants to go to the same temperature. So hot will go to cold.
Mm-hmm.
So in that shade area, when you have this light breeze come up the road there, as the breeze goes through that garden, it can't go anywhere except come through here and then vice versa. So you get, so they do add a little bit of cool, but mainly it's just,
it just look good.
If you've got an eco house, you want to make sure you've got a garden inside. And and the beauty of it was because we built this house on such a small block, like we've built to the perimeter on basically every side.
Mm-hmm.
When we open this all the way up, we can have the city view on one side and the forest on the other side. And it just really sort of gives you a much more open plan feeling, a bit more outdoorsy type feeling because you are lacking a bit of a backyard. So obviously we've got that.
That's such a good point. I haven't noticed that.
No.
I have not noticed that.
I would not have said that this is a small block either. Like it literally feels so much bigger than what it is. But this is so tranquil. Like it is so calming and like relaxing. Yeah. So obviously you let us in remotely earlier, which blew our minds. What else, like how else is the house sort of linked together? Like what's the tech that's been used?
Well, we've done a number of projects outside of just Solaire's brand now, where we've used the guys from Digital Residence across town here. And we use the Control 4 system, which runs all your home automation. And that's wired in this house with Philips Dynalight. And also, you see those three computers on like little touch screens around the house. So you can control your audio, your lights, your fans, your alarm systems. You can look at your cameras from anywhere in the world, including here. And also, separate to that, you can look at your live energy usage. You can look at your live energy production, and then obviously how much you've, you know, used during this day, your weekly averages, et cetera, et cetera. And I've tested that from a sailing boat in Greenland. I've tested that from a beach in Mexico. And the city of Copenhagen as well. So I've tested it all around the world. It works, and you can
definitely
actually
works.
Oh yeah, yeah, you can actually like, and you can turn the lights on. You can be sitting on a boat with, next to an iceberg and go, "What's this?" And then one thing that we did very uniquely, and Control 4 actually had to design the switch for us the very first time. We came up with a thing called the green switch, and we basically coined it in this home, and we just run it as a standard now. And what it is we've wired the house so that you can press one button when you leave the house, and it'll turn off everything in the house except for your fridge, your washing machine, and it's all programmable, so whatever you really want. Your fridge, your washing machine, and your security. And you can leave your oven on if you want, because you're cooking something. That way, if you've got kids that are running amok, PlayStation's on, you've left the hair straightener on, and you don't have, you don't want to think, "Oh, did I leave that? Did I leave that hair straightener on?" Then you can just press one button either when you leave the house, and it'll, and you can give it 30 seconds, 3 minutes, 5 minutes, drive down the road. It'll turn off everything. It'll arm the house. It'll turn off all the lights. You can just make it do whatever you want. And if you forgot, then when you're out, you can just press the green button on your phone. And that'll bring the house down to idle at about this house here will idle at about 0.5 of a kilowatt. So even without the sun shining, that this house would last 56 hours before you need the sun to come up or the grid to come back on. So yeah, this house was actually designed to be net zero energy buildings. So I mentioned to the girls before about we actually built this entire house off the solar power generated on the house next door, because we built three houses in a row here. And next door is Le Fleur, and it's got two Tesla Powerwalls with 27 kilowatts of energy and 13.5 kilowatts on the roof. And we actually just ran two power leads over the fence to build the entire home right through to completion. And even with a five-bed, five-bath house with four occupants, their power bill was still only 99 cents. So it gives you an idea of how well we've designed the home to get the best out of it when it comes to tech. And some of the ways that we did that was we would run direct current fans, so DC fans, because they use a lot less voltage or amperage. And then when it comes to a pool, sometimes a pool, depending on the size in your house, can use up to 20% of your electricity, whereas what we've done is we've put in direct current variable speed pool pumps that are optimized for solar. So what it means is that if you don't, instead of having just one speed for a small pump or a small pool, we can dial it back so that we can just minimize it just enough to keep the pool healthy. And then that way we might only be using 3/4 of the capacity of the pump, and it's direct current, so it's, you know, it's already 75% less power. And then we can optimize it so that it comes on when the sun comes up, so we're not chewing into batteries, we're using excess solar energy. So in the peak part of the day where you can't use all the energy because there's too much getting generated, that's when your pool pump's cranking. So you technically you won't get any power bill from your pool or any representation on your energy usage from your pool. In this house, we stepped it up again. And obviously, from an innovation perspective and also supporting other Brisbane businesses, we're very proud to try and, wherever we can, help ideas, innovators and companies bring their products to the market. So now we've actually got Australia's first three-phase hybrid smart inverter in the garage, which they put in here as their first to market. But that was also a partnership between the University of Queensland, because they're one of the big funders. And that inverter is also what they call VPP ready. So it's ready to be plugged into a virtual power plant where you can actually trade between houses. So if there was another one of those inverters next door or across the road or down the road, they can actually talk to each other. And if I've got too much energy, I can credit it back to the grid and you can take the credit, so
that
to speak.
That is crazy. Yeah.
So that's the future that we're heading to. It's still a little bit lost in regulation, but it's ready for it.
Wow. That's remarkable. That's game changing.
Hope you followed that.
No.
Next
so
level.
World's
innovation.
First.
Yeah.
World's first.
Yeah. I guess there's so many groundbreaking technologies that you've just spoken about there. Is there
anything else that you are so excited about that's in, like, not necessarily even just with you guys, but technology that you know is coming that you are so excited to have and harness?
I think that's another whole podcast, but to be fair, yeah. No, given some of the projects.
Does that mean there's a lot?
There's a lot. There's a lot in the building space, particularly. You know, we've always been excited about microgrids, embedded energy networks, shared batteries, shared power systems, and the virtual power plant. But, you know, they're probably the big ones that are easier to sort of low hanging fruit.
Well, I know at the end of every podcast, I always say I feel like I've learned so much, but today I think we've taken that to a whole new level. Like,
literally,
we did a lot of research before this podcast, and I kind of had all these ideas, but actually, like, hearing it and seeing it and living it, like, it's just, as we kind of said at the start, it's a beautiful luxury home. I would love this house regardless. But now I'm starting to think about all the stuff that I'm personally doing, and I hope we sort of started those conversations with some other people as well. So we'll pop everything in the show notes, but where can people find you?
You can find us pretty well across the board. It's just basically at Solair Properties for Instagram, the same as LinkedIn, Facebook, same, and also YouTube. And the probably one thing I didn't mention is that we actually filmed this whole house being built in a 10-part documentary series.
Amazing. Yeah,
from when we turned soil till completion. So that can be found on our Instagram TV or YouTube as well. So you'll see all the things that I spoke about behind the wall.
Yeah, we'll definitely share that.
Cool. Is there anything that you wanted to add, Harley?
Probably the only thing is just as much as we covered a lot of things that sounded technical, as you alluded to, it's just like in any normal house. It's beautiful. It looks after itself. It's healthy. And that filter that we looked at, that's the only maintenance that you have to do with it. So even though it's technical, you know, leave that to the builders. Don't be scared of this type of technology. It's not what you consider first generation. It's widely known right throughout Europe. And, you know, there's over 80,000 of these homes built in various environments around the world. It will be the new standard, and just do whatever you can. Start simple and don't be afraid to reach out on our channels.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, and
thank
we'll
you.
Talk to you all soon.
Absolute pleasure.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode. If you liked it, don't forget to hit subscribe and share the episode with your reno friends.
If you're looking for like-minded people, come and join us in our private Facebook group. Or follow us on the gram at renovating_Australia. See you next time.